Welcome back. We're going to get into part two with Wilfredo Torres in just a second here. Like I said, I'm keeping these intros short. I am very busy getting Arkham Manor wrapped up. I know I've thanked everyone for listening, and I've asked you all to spread the word and leave feedback on iTunes, but also thanks for all the support on the work. I've seen a lot of activity on all my social networking sites. Yes. I know, I complain about it. I get it. I know this. But I also know I got to do it, and I'm learning how to do it better. And maybe my complaining about it was not me not being good at it. I can admit that I will project. I can admit that. I might hate on something just because I am unhappy with something going on with me. Let's say my career. I'm not saying that's the case now, but that has been the case in the past. And I can project all that hate onto other things. I'm a child, and it has taken me 40-something years. I'm still working through it to figure out that the world is not fair. That life is unjust. And good things happen to bad people, and bad things happen to good people. And I don't want that to be true. And my head has a hard time wrapping itself around that stuff. So, like a child, I get angry. So, bear with me on all that. And enjoy the hypocrisy that is me. I am a Gemini after all. So I can see two sides to things. And I can see when I'm being a child. And I can see when I'm not. And I'm just working through all that. So this is my journey. All right, let's get into this part two with Wilfredo Torres. I've got a lot of big ones coming up. I'm setting out to record as soon as I'm done with Arkham Manor. Doing a little New York trip to record some episodes. And I think I have a signing with Becky Cloonan coming up. And I was going to say something. I don't remember. My brain is so fried. Lots of good things coming up. Lots of exciting stuff coming up. Good things for the podcast. Good things for the career. And life is good. Bet you never thought you'd hear that. All right, so we're going to pick up. You had moved to Atlanta.
Yes.
To be near your ex and your two children.
Yep.
And you got a job?
I did.
What were you doing?
Help desk support, you know, IT stuff.
And how old were you when this happened?
30, 31.
And you're still not really thinking about an art career?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, at that point, I'd completely stopped drawing.
All right, this is crazy.
So, going back a bit, for a while there, after my wife and I first got together, she encouraged me. Okay. She said, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? That's when I started doing, you know, sample packets and trying to find out how you go about this whole thing.
And how old were you in this?
I've got great stories about that, but, well, you know, but, yeah, there I was like 20 because my daughter wasn't born yet.
Okay. So tell me one of those great
stories. So, all right. So, I didn't think it was something that was possible for me.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't think that that's something that I could do.
Okay.
You know, I'd never gone to art school. I had no formal training. I didn't know what the process was. I didn't know what a convention was. I didn't know what submission packets were. Nothing. I just read comic books and that's it. And okay. I knew how to draw. And one particularly sucky day, you know, she comes over and she says, you know, I'm taking you somewhere. And I'm like, where are we going? She wouldn't tell me. So we get in the car. We had this beat up little fucking Chevy Chevette hatchback thing. And
I know a Chevette. My best friend in high school had a Chevette.
Oh, God. We called it the shit vet,
but it got us everywhere we had to go.
Yeah. But so she drives into the city, right? And I'm like, where the fuck are we going? And she pulls up to this, you know, skyscraper building. And I'm like, what is this? You know? And then I'm like looking, and I see the fucking Warner Brothers logo on the side of the building. She'd gone through my comic books and got DC's address from the editorial page, and she drove me there. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome, this and that. So I'm thinking, I'm like, this is cool, you know, seeing the building. She starts parking. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, well, let's go in. I'm like, babe, we can't just walk into an office building. She's like, yeah, why not? I'm like, so, you know, I'm like, all right, whatever. So I follow her in and stuff, and I'm like, you know, you walked into the building and it's like this huge lobby and I'm just so taken back. And she's like, well, you know, she walks up to the security guard and I'm literally trying to like grab her. She walks up to the security guard at the desk and she's like, what floor is DC Comics on? And I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my God, we're going to get arrested. We're going to get kicked out of here. Guard's like, oh, it's on, they're on the 25th floor. And, she's like, okay, come on. Walks over to the elevator bank. And I'm freaking out the whole time. I'm like, what are we doing? She hits 25, goes up on the elevator. Elevator doors open up. And it's this gigantic, you know, metallic gold DC bullet on the wall. And I just freaked out. I'm like, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. You know, we walk into the lobby and they had this huge Superman figure that was busting through the wall and the couches were like red and yellow and blue.
I remember that.
Oh, my God, dude. I was like in tears practically. This was like my nirvana. I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm looking and it was just insane. And, you know, I got some courage up and I went and I spoke to the receptionist. And I asked her, like, you know, well, what do people usually do? And she explained to me how the submissions worked. So I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, all right, thank you. You know, left, went home, started working on submissions, putting submission packets together, mailing them out.
That's a good girl you got there.
Yeah. And I got a response back from Neil Posner.
Okay.
And he sent me a sample script. He passed away, like, years later. But he was very encouraging, sent me a sample script and, you know, and I worked on that, sent that back in, you know, and then she went a step further. Now she's pregnant at this point. So she's got the belly.
With your daughter?
Yeah. She's got the belly and she's like, you know, I'm waiting to hear back on submission packets. And she's like, well, maybe it'll be better if we just go hand them in person. I'm like, no, you don't do that. She's like, well, why not? And I'm like, fuck. So we literally drive into the city. I printed up a bunch of submission packets, you know, and we drive to the DC building again. And I went and handed in my submission packet, and the receptionist was super nice. She's like, you know what? I'm going to put it right on top of the stack. I'll go into his office. I'll put it right on top of the stack. And I'm like, thank you so much. Whatever. We go to Marvel's office. Marvel's office at the time was not as impressive.
No.
But I lied and said I had to use the bathroom, and they let me in.
Wow, they would.
And
not
then
I
I walked in, and everybody's door signs were word balloons.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's just the fucking coolest thing. So they were super nice. And then we're like sitting there. I'm sitting by the elevators with my big bellied pregnant wife, you know, and people are coming in and out of the elevator. And a guy comes out and he's like, you know, oh, hey, can I look at your portfolio? I'm like, sure. I'm just looking at my portfolio. And it was Mark Pacella. He did a book back in the day called Tooth and Claw. I don't know what he's working on now. But he was super nice and encouraging, and he asked for my phone number, and I gave it to him, and, you know, true to his word, you know, he called me, and he was on the phone with me for literally, like, maybe 2 hours.
Wow.
And just explained how everything worked, you know. And he's, you know, he sees me there with my pregnant wife, so I guess he took pity on me. But
that's important for all of us to get back.
So yeah, I think so. And then we went to the Milestone office. At the time. And I'd actually, when I went to Marvel, it was, you know, I didn't know how they worked, so I gave them a submission packet that was like Superman and Batman. But I'd done a specific Milestone.
Okay.
Basically, what I'd done was I grabbed one of their comics and redrew 5 or 6 pages out.
Right.
You know, of course, the guy that I'm sitting with happened to be the editor on the book, and I'd taken the liberty of like redesigning a bunch of the characters and changing shit. You know,
yeah, we all did.
And he just tore me apart. Like, you know, and I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, this guy's talking to me like I said something about his mother or something.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so I kept trying to do that, and I sent packets to him. It's just not the other thing. But then as it got closer to the due date, I kind of had a moment where I was like, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to have a kid. I'm not making any money doing this. I don't know how to make money doing this. I don't know how this is going to work. And I just said, well, fuck it. And I literally, you know, pretty much stopped drawing. It was just, you know.
And how old were you?
21.
And you picked, so.
I draw, like I doodle every now and then, but.
So, and fast forward to Atlanta, you're now, what, 31?
Yeah.
So 10 years?
Something like that,
with hardly any drawing? Was that eating away at you inside, or were you just not thinking about it?
I wasn't thinking about it, which is why I didn't draw. I didn't buy comic books.
Was it just easier to not draw?
Yeah, it was depressing. It was like, you know, like a retired baseball player that doesn't want to watch a game because it's depressing.
Right, just pretend it's not there.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so then what changes?
My wife and I got back together again.
All right, so let's talk about that.
After a while, like, I was spending a lot of time with her, spending a lot of time with the kids. And, you know, I'd never fallen out of love with her. I was always in love with her.
You just were angry.
I just couldn't, you know, deal, you know.
Right.
It was too much.
You were too young.
You know, yeah. And I'd fucked up too much, and I didn't want to have to apologize for the rest of my life.
What do you mean
and
you fucked up?
I was just, you know, I never cheated on her or were abusive or anything. I didn't take care of her the way I was supposed to.
Right.
Like, the way I thought I was supposed to.
I got you.
You know, what a husband is supposed to do.
So you just weren't a great
husband. As far
as,
like, providing and, you
know. Right. You weren't a bad husband. You just weren't a good husband.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, but as we spent more time together, it just became clear that that's where I wanted to be. Uh-huh. It wasn't just that I wanted to be with my kids. I wanted to be with her.
Okay.
And we slowly but surely got the relationship back going again.
Start dating again.
Got remarried, yeah.
Wow. So how long were you divorced?
7 years.
And then you got remarried.
Yeah.
So... So you had to do all the stuff over again, the wedding ceremony, the paperwork.
We had am I cursing too much?
No, curse all you want.
We had a shotgun wedding, like literally in the mayor's office at City Hall.
Did you?
And it was literally, it was like an office like this.
Did you use the same ring?
No.
You saved up and got a new one?
She didn't get an engagement ring that time.
Okay.
We just bought wedding bands or whatever because we were like, you know.
So how did you propose to her this time? With no ring.
I don't think it was. You know what? I'm trying to remember, but I don't think there was a proposal.
I think it was
almost like a conversation where we were like, we should get married again.
Okay.
You know?
Sure.
So this time we flew to Vegas. And we got married at one of the little wedding chapel deals. And, you know.
What'd you do with the kids?
Oh, the kids were with their grandparents.
Okay. All right, so now you're married again.
Now I'm married again.
How do you get an art career going at this point? I can't believe
again,
this
my wife is the one that always encouraged me to do everything.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
if it wasn't for
her,
I'd probably be living in a fucking cardboard box in an alley somewhere.
Oh, my God.
You know, because I have no, like, personal motivation for myself.
Is it a lack of confidence or just a
lack
of motivation?
It's a lack of confidence. It's a lack of ambition. It's, you know, I tell her and I tell my kids that all the time. They're probably sick of hearing it, but it's true. Every single thing that I do is for them.
Sure. No, I think almost, well, not every, but probably almost any husband, father's.
Yeah. Anything that them. I do because of them, for them.
Sure.
You know, and the comic book thing, I'd never be able to do it.
All right. So how do you get this going? You're now, you're how old now? 30?
I'm 31, 32 at this point.
How do you start drawing? What happens?
I was happy again. I was happy. And as I got happy, I started to draw again. It was fun, you know? And
were you reading
and
comics
I started
this
reading
time?
Comic books
oh,
again.
Oh, okay. So you know, reading.
I started reading comic books again, and I got back into it again. And again, she encouraged me, and she was looking around. And she was like, oh, you know, there's these convention things that they do where
did this.
Yeah. She looked up. She was at work one day and she like looked it up, you know, and she saw it's like, oh, there's like all these local conventions where they sell comic books and artwork and this and that and the other thing. We should go sometime. And I'm like, okay. And took me to a convention. And she's like, you know, why don't you bring some artwork? And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. You know? But I don't know, if I did it subconsciously, but the t-shirt I was wearing had a design that I'd drawn on it.
Okay.
So maybe I did it subconsciously. Sure. Like, I do have something to show. It's on my back, but, you know. But anyway, I got to talking to these guys that were at the convention. It was a dinky little show. And
what show was it?
I can't remember. It was like a... Everything was DIY that was there. Everybody had their Xeroxed, printed
like
up comic books.
Zine show?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And there was a group there, an Atlanta group called Terminus Media.
Yeah. I remember.
They were there. They were set up there. And I got to talking to them, and they told me they used to have these, I don't know if they still do it, but they used to have these Sunday groups.
Did you work for them?
Yeah.
I must have met you. All right, go ahead.
So they used to have these Sunday groups, you know, where a bunch of writers and artists would get together.
Yeah.
And they were trying to put together an anthology book.
Right.
They'd done one before that, you know, and had like little 8-page anthology stories or whatever. And they were getting a new one together. So I showed up and I brought my portfolio that time. I had started drawing pages and I had a bunch of, you know, pinups and just stuff that I'd drawn. Nothing formal, you know, because I'd never done a portfolio review or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed up and they liked it and they wanted to include me, and those became my friends, you know. That's how I met Adrian from Sidebar.
Okay.
And we just
he in with them?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we just automatically hit it off. And I did an anthology with them. I did two anthologies with them. And it was cool. It was, you know, I got that automatic feedback. I'd never been around people that were into comic books. So it was refreshing. It was cool. It was encouraging. Everybody liked my stuff.
Right.
So it was just a completely new experience. And I loved it. And then, you know, as we were doing that, it was like, I wanted more. I wanted to actually work professionally. So I kept trying to go, but they, you know, they put my stuff in front of Stell Freeze.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I got to meet Brian through them, and I got to meet a lot of the local guys through them. And, you know, I met Don Hillsman. Don Hillsman gave me tips about inking and, you know, so I started going with them to conventions and then started doing little local shows to go around, try and get portfolio reviews and stuff. And just from that, you know, like the first convention I'd ever went to was Baltimore. Because, again, my wife looked it up, found out about it, you know, made the plans for it, got the, you know, where are we going? Baltimore. I'm like, what's in Baltimore? I'm like, a convention. She's like, a convention. I'm like that one we went to? Because we don't need to go to Baltimore for that. And she's like, no, it's like a big one. I'm like, okay. So we went and, you know, she's like, I walked in. And I turned right around. As soon as I saw the con floor, I'm like, I can't fucking do this. What is this? Like, I can't fucking do this. And she's like, no, you got to go in. So I'm like looking around. And I did a couple of passes by everybody's tables. And I'm like seeing. And it's literally, when I'm seeing these guys, I felt like I was like seeing like movie stars, like sure, rock stars.
I remember that.
You know?
Yeah, I remember doing that too.
I saw Eric Larson. I'm like, ah! You know?
I remember the first time I saw Jason Pearson, it was, I think, the first San Diego I went to. He was very young. I think Body Bags was just out or something.
Yeah.
And there was this booth, and it was Mignola, Jeff Darrow, Art Adams, who I knew these were like the gods.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Jason Pearson was amongst them. I was like, oh, my God. And he was real skinny and not at all what he looks like now. And I was just like, he's so young and he's like a rock star. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. The first official portfolio review I ever did, I walked over to Mike Oeming.
Uh-huh.
And I offered him $20 to look through my portfolio. And he's like, no, what? Have people been charging you to look at your portfolio? And I'm like, no, this is the first portfolio review I've ever done. And he's like, you don't pay. You don't. You
Did
know,
you choose
don't have
him
to
randomly?
Do that.
Was he just available and you were in front
of
him?
He just happened to be the person that I knew.
Okay.
That so you by knew that his point, work. You know, in walking around, I'd built up, you know, I'd ginned up enough courage.
Okay.
And I was in front of, you know, Mike Oeming. So I just turned around, went to Mike Oeming. You
okay.
Know, I'm like, I love the way this guy draws. So, you know.
Okay.
And then after that, he said, oh, go talk to this guy. Go talk to that guy. And he sent me over to Howard Chaykin.
Oh, awesome.
And Howard Chaykin, you know, was really generous and gave me a lot of great tips. And
he's such a good dude.
Go over to Walt Simonson.
Oh,
I'm like, no,
awesome.
Fuck no. Simonson, you know.
Dude, I've been to his house.
Oh, God. I love Watson.
He's an amazing person. But he was like, we were talking about on the last episode.
Previously.
Right. we were just talking about guys who, like, I didn't respond to, like, what we'll call house style stuff, but the more avant-garde artists spoke to me. And Simonson spoke to me. I have a good Simonson story. I don't think I've ever told. Have I ever told a Simonson story?
Well, now's a good time. I mean, you have
a
platform.
Yeah, let's do it.
Do it.
All right, so one of the first comic books I ever got was in the Simonson X Factor run. Like, the first one I got was, why I got it was the cover. And Walt Simonson did the interiors, and he did the cover, and it was Cyclops just blasting the shit out of his eye beams. Like, just... It was just this dynamic pose. He was like shooting towards the upper right of the comic.
I know what I'm talking about. He was blasting the logo apart.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then there was a maybe not. I might be misremembering, but I think there's a border of Marvel heads around him too. Maybe that part is wrong.
I don't remember.
But anyways, it was Cyclops in this dynamic pose with his fists out. I was like, that is awesome. I gotta buy that. So I bought that, and I loved his work. His work spoke to me, and that was kind of what really dragged me in. And I always loved Simonson. So when I'm in grad school, there was an annual trip to New York that every year a different teacher would take a crew of students up to New York. Mm. Now, when I was in school, one of my favorite teacher was James Sturm, who's a graphic novelist. And James works for Drawn and Quarterly. He did The Golem's Mighty Swing. Okay. Learned a lot from James. And the fact that he was taking us up there versus the other professors who didn't do much for me, I was like, this is going to be an interesting academic experience. So I knew we were going to see a different side of the industry, but he wasn't like someone who worked for Drawn and Quarterly who dismissed DC and Marvel. He took us to Vertigo. He took us to Marvel. He took us to DC. We went to Peter Cooper's studio. We went to a Brooklyn cartoonist party with Jason Lutz and Jason Little and Sam Henderson and a bunch of underground cartoonists. And he also, Walt Simonson had visited our school. It was very friendly, him and his wife. And James took us to his house. And Walt invites us in, and his house is a fucking museum of the best artwork you could ever imagine. So, like, you walk in, and there's this studio immediately to the right. It's in this beautiful part. I think it's Westchester. You're in the mountains, in the woods, and his studio's off to the right, and there's a wall right next to his studio that's just floor-to-ceiling artwork. Mm. You name it. They're on there. Bernie Wrightson. You just name it. They are on that wall. And we're just spending all day looking at this artwork. We go into his studio, and there's this little glass case with a brush in it. And he opens it up, and he lets us all hold the brush, and then he puts it back in the glass box. And he's like, that was a Walt Kelly's brush. Like, that was one of Walt Kelly's brushes that he had gotten a hold of. Walt Kelly is his hero. So that was cool. We go into his living room. There's a painting of him. On, like, he's sitting on the couch. Above him is a painting of him on that couch in, like, his robe, drinking his coffee that John J. Muth had done of him in the house, because John J. Muth at one time was either married or engaged to his daughter. So he was part of the family. So he just one morning set up this canvas and painted Walt, which was incredible. I had to go to the bathroom. I go into the bathroom, take a piss, turn around to wash my hands, and on the wall is Mignola's cover to the Wolverine Jungle Adventure, which was one of my favorite Mignola books. And I was like, oh my God, I just stayed in the bathroom for like 50 minutes. I come out of the bathroom. And
it's like, you were in there for a long time.
Well, did you see the Mignola in there? So then I come out, and there's an Alex Toth Enemy Ace. Maybe it was Enemy Ace. It was a plane strip, but it was Alex Toth. In the kitchen. It was just an amazing day. Him and Louise took us out for pizza, and they were great. So graduation time comes, and my friend who was in school with Pat was like, I got you something. It'll be here soon. You know, months go by. I just forgot about it. He calls me up. He's like, I got it. It arrived. I got your graduation present. I was like, okay, cool. I go over. I open it up, and there is a 14 by 17 drawing of Cyclops blasting his eye beams because Pat had told him the story.
Yeah.
And asked and wanted to buy this for graduation. And it said, you know, congrats, Sean, blah, blah, blah. And I pick it up to look at it closer, and another piece falls from behind it. And it's a giant Orion, which said, Pat, sorry this took so long. And I don't think he charged him for anything. But it's just a great story about who he is. Yeah. So, okay. So that I've derailed this conversation. Well,
I didn't get all that.
right.
But he was, you know, he's talked to me for about an hour and a half and gave me a whole bunch of really helpful tips. Not just on drawing, but just on how to, the mind state that you should try to have I'm still trying to figure out how to not obsess over things, but, you know.
Yeah. Don't ask me.
I don't know.
Okay, so then you get hired?
So then I was at another regional show here in Georgia, and a buddy of mine took me over to meet Sanford.
Sanford Green?
Sanford Green.
Okay.
And we walked over to Sanford, and, you know, Sanford was kind enough to look at my portfolio and flip through it and stuff. And he's just, you know, doing the usual, you know, type of thing. Didn't really say anything. And then he just kind of flips it closed, stands up, and, like, grabs my portfolio and just says, come with me. I'm like, okay. And he walks me over to this guy and puts my portfolio down in front of him and says, hire him. And it was Sanford had been offered a gig with the guy, he was too busy, or, you know, the guy couldn't pay him his page rate or whatever. So Sanford had to pass on it. But he knew that this guy was looking for somebody. Uh-huh. So he walked me over, introduced me, and, you know.
Who was the guy?
I can't remember his name. He was.
Was it a publisher?
No. It was a guy. He was trying to self-publish a book.
Okay.
And but he had, you know, he had the money to pay for it.
Okay.
And the book ended up coming out through digital webbing.
Okay.
And that was the first printed work that I had. But before that actually came out, by the time I'd finished it already, it was only 3 issues. And I finished it, and I was still working full time at the time. I was drawing at home. You know, and I'd given, you know, my portfolio and my info to so many people at this point. And I got an email from Mark Waid when he was the editor of Boom.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's one of those names that you see show up in your inbox and you're like, holy shit. Yeah. You know? So he gave me a gig at Boom. And I did a book called Salem for them.
All right. So what's going through your head? You left drawing I was for doing years, that. And, that rough
when I
childhood.
Was doing the book for Boom, I was still working full time.
Right. Right.
And I was dying, man. I was dragging ass so bad. I was trying to, you know, and my wife.
So you were working a 40-hour-a-week job.
Yep.
And doing a comic. How much time did you have per issue to do that?
It was supposed to be, you know, 5 weeks per issue.
Were you doing it in 5 weeks?
I think the first one, the first issue I got done in 5 weeks, but I just wasn't, I wasn't sleeping. And I was literally, I'd go to work the next day and my desk, you know, was against a wall. So I basically had my back to everybody that worked with me. And I'd literally nod off at work.
Sure. Or, you know? Yeah.
I'm like staring at my computer and just fall asleep.
And how old are you now?
32.
Yeah, this is hard. You are in that hard position, that rare position that I was in, where you have a full time job, you already have children, who are, you know, not babies.
Yeah,
and you have a certain lifestyle you're used to with, you know, salary, whatever it is, and now your dream's starting to come true, and you have got to do crazy hours.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, like, and I posted about this not too long ago. I did a portfolio review before I started, before I got the Boom gig. I did a portfolio review with an editor, and you know, I handed my portfolio, and he's flipping through it. He's not saying anything the entire time. He's not pointing anything out really. He's just kind of looking at stuff. Went through the entire thing, start to finish. And, again, flips it closed, and he looks at me and kind of looks me up and down. He says, how old are you? I'm 32. You married? Yeah. You got kids? Yeah, I have 2 kids. And he just kind of looked at me point blank, says, you'll never make it. And that was it. That was the end of the conversation.
I hate that.
And I literally, I wanted to pull him over the table. Who was it? I'm not gonna say.
Well, I mean, was it who was the publisher? Can you say that?
He was still working for DC at the time.
Okay.
He's not anymore.
That's such a shit thing to say.
But and the weirdest thing is,
I mean, I understand
everyone
the
that
intent.
I know that knows him has said, they go on and on about what a nice guy he is, what a sweet guy he is. And I don't know if it was something about me.
No,
or
I would
maybe
say,
he was just having a
I
shitty
understand
day.
The intent, because
and I understand what he meant. It took me a little while, but I figured out what he meant.
Yeah, the intent is you have no idea how hard this is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But what he doesn't understand is that doesn't fucking matter. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
That's what he doesn't understand.
But yeah, it was tough. And I was dragging ass.
How long did you do that for?
Maybe an issue and a half. And then I was at home and I told my wife, I was like, I don't know if I can do this, you know? And she just looked at me and she said, I want you to go into work tomorrow and quit.
Dude, so your wife
she's like, don't
awesome.
Give 2 weeks notice, go into work, quit, leave, come home, and start working.
Was it hard financially, the transition?
At the time, she was still working full-time, mm-hmm. and she was an insurance claims adjuster. So she made a decent salary, and we had health insurance through her.
Okay.
So, you know, she was my sugar mama for a little while.
Sure.
You know, but yeah, like I said, if it wasn't for her, very literally, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be able to do this.
Yeah, I can see that. So did you just march in and say I'm out?
Yeah.
And how they respond?
I was like my son with the punch. All I needed was permission.
Right.
I went in and, you know, I'm talking to my manager and I'm like, yeah, I'm leaving. He's like, are you giving 2 weeks notice? I'm like, no, I'm leaving. I just came in to tell you I don't work here anymore. And I tried to be polite about it, but I really did have that mind state that I need to go home and work on pages.
Right, sure.
So I was trying to get in and get out, you know. And he's talking to me. He's like, what are you going to do? I mean, this is really abrupt and this and that and the other thing. And it was super irresponsible and fucked up. But
I wouldn't say it's irresponsible. Well, you were going for something. Yeah. But you had a job.
I was working.
I'd say irresponsible is I got no options, but I'm quitting.
Like, I'm quitting. What are you going to do? I don't know.
I'm going to.
But I told him, he's like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I'm going to draw comic books. And he just kind of looks at me and starts laughing. He's like, all right, go with God.
Well, you did the right thing.
I think so.
So then were things easier after that?
A little bit. But I was, you know.
Have you had moments like that where you're like, I don't know if I can do this since
constantly,
you quit?
Constantly. Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks.
Constantly. It's constant. Are you kidding me? I had, you know, I was doing the shadow book for Dynamite, and then I got like an issue and a half of Quantum and Woody for Valiant, and then I did an issue of Batman 66. And this is all within like literally a 2 month period. You know, so I'm, you know, editors are emailing me back and forth and I'm just cranking, you know, cranking constantly, you know, but you know, at that point I can't make anybody happy because I took too much, but you know, I was at that point where it's like, if DC calls you and offers you Batman 66, you don't say no. Dude, I don't give a shit what you're working on.
I had to turn down Spider-Man.
I don't know if I'm at that point now, but at
no, I wasn't at any point to turn it down. But I had a full time job. I already had. I mean, I was already working for Marvel. I couldn't. I mean, that was my dream, Spider-Man. But it was a Spider-Man short story or this 3-issue arc I was doing, and I couldn't do both. And I didn't want to fuck over the editor on what I was doing, so I had to say no. Yeah. It sucked, but it was the right thing.
Yeah, but I had to. You know, like I said, I had that. You know, about 2 months period, and it was just insane. And also, my wife's health took a real downturn at that same time, so it just compounded it, made it even worse. You know, but I got through it. I got everything turned in, and I'd already been talking to Mark about the new project, and I was
Millar.
Yeah, and I had
that was fast.
I had another. Yeah, it was fast.
How did you get so? I mean, I love your work. I'm not saying not.
No, I know exactly what
you
did.
How did you get so much steam going so fast?
I have no fucking idea, man.
Were you all over the internet?
I think
promoting?
It's just a question. Yeah, I think it's just a question of.
So, what do you think
the
is the
right
best
person in seeing your stuff and putting it in front of somebody
but
else? What,
right, but.
I don't know how he saw my stuff.
No, I'm not
know.
Asking that, but what do you think is the best thing to do with social media to get out there?
Just post your stuff.
Where?
You know, everywhere.
And post what?
Work.
Just panels and pages?
Fucking draw, post, you know, like you're a teacher. Everything that, you know, we went through when you were showing me the Cintiq and everything. There's so many people online that would love to see that because there's so many kids that I think are like me when I was younger that they don't know. They don't know about conventions. I mean, they don't know how things
that's
work
why I
or this
talk.
And that, but they have social media.
Right.
So when they find, they search it out and they find it. And, you know, I've noticed that the thing that people respond to the most is process stuff. They like to see, you know, how the sausage is made.
So where do you post? Instagram,
Twitter,
Facebook.
Not so much Facebook anymore because Facebook, I kind of have it reserved for like my family and friends and colleagues.
Do you have a page for your art?
No.
Where else do you post? Is that it?
That's it. I have a Tumblr, but yeah.
How often do you post?
Almost on a daily basis.
Just once a day?
Because I'll be working. And as long as it's not something that's spoilerish or anything, I'll take a picture of a panel, know, and post that. And, you know, because I love seeing that from other artists.
Well, you certainly deserve all the opportunities you're getting. I'm just asking, you know, how you, because we were talking earlier about social media.
Yeah. I think that's been an important component to it because I've gotten, you know, I worked with Dark Horse on a Lobster Johnson book that I did for Mike Mignola. He messaged me through Facebook.
Okay.
You know, I was sitting at my son's baseball game one morning and I got a message on Facebook from Mike Mignola and I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
That's awesome.
You know?
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
This is a great story. Let me travel down one more road with you. Do you talk to your dad at all?
Actually, over the summer, I took a short vacation and I went with my wife and the kids to Puerto Rico. And my brother and my sister on my father's side that live in Puerto Rico, again, social media, they found me on Facebook and whatever and friended me. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And, you know, they messaged me on there and I kind of got in touch with them and my brother got in touch with me and, you know, me and my dad got a lot of shit, you know?
Sure.
And he just made it very clear. He was like, you know what? I know you and dad have problems and you don't get along and you don't want to have a relationship with him.
Had you spoken to him at all since he went to Puerto Rico?
The last time I spoken to him was after my son was born.
Okay.
You know, because I basically, you know, I got in contact with him when my daughter was born. And I basically just sent him a nasty ass letter and said, you know, just wanted to let you know you're going to be a grandfather.
Uh-huh.
You know, do with that what you will. And he came and he was around when my daughter was born. Then he was gone again.
Uh-huh.
You know, I didn't hear from him, no phone calls, nothing. And then I don't remember how he, you know, knew about my son, but my son was about 2 years old and he was around. I think he went to New York to go visit my uncle, his brother. And, you know, he's like, well, I'm here. Let me go see my son. You know, since I'm here.
Might as well.
You know, half an hour away. It's not a big deal. So, you know, he got in touch and I, you know, it was a very contentious visit. But, you know, I was like, yeah, this is your grandson. That's your granddaughter. You know, and then after that, it was just like, you know what? I'm a grown ass man. I don't need a dad anymore.
Right.
You know, whatever, you know, lessons I needed to learn from him, I had to learn on my own the hard way. And, you know, I've been through a divorce. I'm a father. I have two kids. I don't need you. You know, I needed you when I was getting my ass kicked.
Right.
You know, when I was supposed to learn how to drive, when I was supposed to do all this other shit, you know, when I got arrested, you weren't around for any of that. So, you know, what do I need you around for now?
Right.
You know, but like I said, my brother got in touch with me and he said, you know, made it very clear. I know you guys have your shit. I don't care about any of that. I know you don't have a relationship with your father, but I want to have a relationship with my brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that just kind of, you know, hit me.
So that's why you went to Puerto Rico?
Well, that's not why, because I wanted to go and, you know, have the kids. The kids hadn't been there since they were, you know, my son had never been there. And my daughter, the last time she'd been there, she was like two. So I wanted them to go and see it and see how it feels to be there and everything.
See where you come
so,
from.
So, yeah. So I told my brother, I'm like, well, you know what? I'm going to be in Puerto Rico next month or whatever. So maybe we can meet up and have dinner or something. So he's like, okay. You know, and then he got in touch with me again. He's like, hey, you know, where are you staying and this and that and the other thing. And then we were going back and forth and he's like, you know, should I bring dad or do you, would you prefer I just come?
What part of Puerto Rico were you staying in?
Jesus, now I forget the name of it.
Wasn't
San Juan. It was a resort. No, it was, we didn't want to do the whole touristy thing. So we went to a resort area, but it's literally, the resort was literally just all locals. You know, it wasn't like a touristy thing.
Okay.
I don't think.
I went. My wife and I went last year.
Yeah.
Stayed at La Conca. I don't think it was in San Juan.
We stayed in El Conquistador.
Okay.
So.
All right. So your brother says, should I
So yeah. Order. So I said, you know, whatever. You know, bring him. Because at this point, you know, I'm constantly, you know, me and my wife would talk about it. And every time I talked about it, I got upset.
Sure.
You know, and it just, it so always hurt. To get this it always out. Hurt. So I was like, you know what? Am I doing myself? You know, he hurt me beforehand. Now, by me holding on to that grudge and carrying that shit around, am I hurting myself?
Yeah.
You know?
So you want to get rid of it.
So I just kind of got to the point
so where I'm like, so he comes in, you walk up.
Have I punished him enough at this point? Uh-huh. You know?
Okay. So he walks in, you walk up, and you pop him on the nose.
No way. My dad beat the crap out of me. Just
thinking of the advice he gave your son.
Yeah. No, so, you know, it was the tough thing about my dad, at least with me anyway, is I can talk all this shit when he's not there.
Of course.
How mad I am, how pissed off I am, fuck him, fuck that, whatever, this and that. Then I get around him, I'm 6 years old.
Right. Oh, right.
And I just want my dad.
Yeah. Well, that's the bottom line. So what happened?
We hung out. We ate, we had a nice conversation. Well, me and my brother had a nice conversation. My dad's kind of tight-lipped. But, you know, it wasn't too bad. And I got to hang out with my sister and she brought her fiance and I got to meet my son's kids, my nephews. And it was just, you know, I wanted to have them in my life. So I'm slowly trying to reconcile with my dad, I guess.
How long ago was this trip?
This was this summer.
Oh, this summer. So you, your wife, and your two kids went down?
Mm-hmm.
Have you spoken to them since?
Yeah.
How do you speak? Via email?
Via email, text. Last time was a phone call.
So you're working on it.
Yeah, you know, I'm working on it. I kept having this thing like, my mom's not in great health. I'm getting older.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's getting older. And I kept having this horrible thought that I'd get a phone call saying.
Yeah, and then you got to live with however it was. Yeah, exactly. Sure.
I didn't want that. I just didn't want that.
I get that.
So
yeah, you start asking yourself, is this.
Because that's just, I already have enough regret. I don't want any more.
Right. So you're working towards it.
So I'm working towards it.
That's good. Anything else you want to discuss, talk about? How's everything now? Life is good?
Well, I mean, like I said, my wife has metastatic breast cancer. So she's been on treatment for that for the past 5 years.
What stage?
5, 6 years. Stage 4.
Oh, wow. For 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. So has she been able to work at all?
She hasn't worked in maybe the past 2 years because she just got to the point where, you know, she started going to, like, the support groups and everything and stuff, and she started to quickly notice that the people that said, you know, kind of stuck their fist up and said, screw this. You know, I'm going to keep working. I'm not going to change my life. This can't beat me. Didn't last very long, you know.
Okay.
And then, you know, you're going through chemo and you're having to go to work and, you know, and it's just.
So where is she at now? She's doing at chemo?
She's at home and she does right now. because, you know, depending on what chemo treatment you're on, it decides what the frequency is. So right now she's like once a week for 3 weeks, and then she has a week off, and then again.
Is she making progress?
Well, it's stage four, so it's not. At this point, it's just keeping it stable.
Okay.
You know, making sure it doesn't spread, making sure it doesn't grow. But when you're stage four and it's you're metastatic, it's metastasized. Metastasized in your bones. So it's not going anywhere.
Okay. You just want to keep it where it is.
Yeah, you just want to keep it.
Are you able to do that?
Her last scan was good. It was stable. But, you know, like I said, the past year has really kicked her ass. So it's been rough, but I mean, she's a tough chick.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
How did you discover it?
Me feeling up her boobs.
You just felt it accidentally?
Yeah, accidentally. You know, guys, grope your wives.
No physical symptoms.
No.
Oh, man. So now it's just try to keep it where it is for as long as you can?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, man.
I don't talk about it too much because I don't want to be that guy that fucks up the party every time. It's like because everybody always has the same reaction you have where it's like everything all of a sudden is like.
No, oh. I think you, well, I don't. I mean, you do what you got to do, but I just keeping it bottled up, I don't think would help either.
No, and I don't. I mean, I don't have a problem talking about it, but it's not the first thing I'll mention in the conversation. It's not exactly my icebreaker.
My wife has cancer.
Yeah.
No, I get that. Well, send her my best.
Thank you.
Anything else you wanted to talk about or anything?
No.
I think we did good.
Thank you.
Do you want to promote anything?
Yes. We've got a book coming out in April with Mark Millar, a prequel book to his and Frank Quitely's Jupiter's Legacy.
Do you get to talk to Frank at all in that?
Frank came up to me. I was sitting at my table at New York Comic Con, and this guy just kind of like, you know, him and his wife just kind of sneak over to my table. He like bends down from my table and whispers. He's like, "Hey, I'm Frank Quitely," because his name isn't Frank Quitely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
so he's like, "I'm Frank Quitely. You know, I just wanted to come by and introduce myself." He's like, "I'm not here. I'm not set up at the show. I just wanted to come by and say hi and, you know, this and that." And I'm like, I didn't get a long conversation with him, but he seemed like a really sweet guy.
Are you a fan of his work?
Oh, yeah.
He's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Okay, so I interrupted you. Anything else you want to promote? Twitter?
I'm at Mighty Fine Line on Twitter. I know that sounds arrogant as hell, but it just happened to be the thing that
I never
picked.
Took it that way.
I hate it, but it's like now it's all over the place. So now I'm like, I can't get rid of it because no one will know who the hell I am.
I never took it like, damn, that's a fine line.
Well, that's why I picked it because I think it was actually.
It was like a fine line, like a 0.3 mechanical pencil. That's what I was thinking.
It's a 0.005. I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was Stealth Freeze.
Oh, he said,
and he said something. He said, "That's a mighty fine line."
Hey,
look, and it just kind of stuck.
Brian
and
said it. Yeah. What about Instagram?
Instagram, I am WTorres1972.
That's when you were born.
Yes,
I know that because I was born in Jersey.
Yes,
from your hometown,
Dirty Jersey,
Morristown. All right. Well, thanks for driving out here. And did you enjoy the pizza? I guess we did.
I did. It was very good.
I should have said this from the
beginning. I'm going to have like horrible heartburn tonight. So thank you.
Oh, it's worth it. It's worth it. It'll keep you drawn.
Yeah.
We started this because you were listening to the podcast and you tweeted at me. And all I can think about is pizza and bagels.
I guess. I was rambling. You were talking to Jason and you were talking about, I think it was in the intro.
The tour?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I just always say everybody's first name.
No, no, like, I was trying
like
to think,
I know these people.
No, I was thinking, did I do another Jason?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know how many Jasons you've done.
I love the Jasons.
Jasons, you're awesome. But yeah, you brought up the bagels and the pizza, and I'm like, fuck. Like, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, god damn, I want a fucking bagel now.
So I invited you out to do it and take you out for pizza. So yes. Was it worth it?
Yes, it was.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for coming out.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Yo, microphone check, 1, 2, what is this? The 5-foot assassin with the roughneck business. I float like gravity, never had a cavity. Got more rhymes than the one that's got family. No need to sweat Arsenio to gain some type of fame. No shame in my game, because I always be the same. Styles upon styles is what I have. You wanted just to fight for, but you still don't know the half. I sport New Balance sneakers to avoid a narrow path. Messing around with this against the size of the... I never have stuff, cause I'm not a half-stepper. Drink a lot of soda, so they call me Dr. Pepper. Refuse to compete with BS competition. Your name is Special Ed, so won't you suckle with the mission? I never walk the streets, think it's all about me. Even though deep in my heart, it really could be. I just try my best to, like, go all out. Some might even say, you're shorty black, you're bugging out.
Zulu Nation, mother's last creation. Minds get flooded, ejaculation. Right on the 2-inch tape, the abstract poet incognito runs the cape, not the best, not the worst. And occasionally I curse to get my point across. So bust the force as I go in between the grit and the dirt. Listen to the mission, listen, missions I do work. As I crack the monotone, chilling up the jazz, so get your own. Smoking R&B, cause they try to dupe me. Or the best of the pack, but they can't do rap. For it's abstract, original, you can't get your own, and that's pitiful. I know I'd be the man if I cold yank the plug on R&B, but I can't, and that's bug. Your brain against my mind. My dough's about to boot out. Or your nasty critters, even though you see I'm bugging.